This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
There's a doctor in the house. Great to be joined in the studio by Dr. Nasser Al-Jafari. He's the medical director at DNA Health Clinic, born in the UK, educated there, but based here in Dubai. He decided to focus on functional medicine after becoming somewhat disillusioned by mainstream medicine and that perpetual cycle of sicker patients and more medications. So it's all about lifestyle factors here for the next hour. And we're looking specifically at weight because, well, I think many people woke up on the first full of Terry's chocolate oranges and thought a change needs to be made. How are you, Doctor?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Happy New Year.
Likewise.
Now, you are a paragon of health and virtue yourself, but do you have any healthy resolutions, intentions or plans for 2020?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I may look it, but I don't feel it.
That's because you're also a father of young twins.
Correct. I think probably practice what I preach a bit more because, you know, it's a typical when it's on your doorstep, you don't tend to use it, do you? Mm. So probably be a bit more analytical about my own health. At the same time, I actually went to the dentist this morning. I just felt I've neglected my dental health since I moved here 5 years ago. I'd classify my dentist like, you know, your family physician, your pediatrician, your gynecologist. You tend to stick with them because you trust them.
It's true.
I find it's just a bit of a minefield, but took the plunge. And what do you think?
Gleaming as ever, gleaming as ever. Do you know what's interesting, actually, when we've had dentists on before, like so obviously Neil Mitchell, a.k.a. the Geordie dentist.
War Geordie dentist.
Dr. Layla. They've come on and they've always talked about how there's not enough of a connection between kind of, you know, general practitioners such as yourself and dentists. And they kind of say, you know, this kind of holistic view of health.
The whole body
that we
approach.
Have these days and, you know, the fact that they can do more to work together. But is this kind of journey to the dentist this morning that kind of maybe incline you to go a bit more often and maybe work a bit more with dentists?
Well, yeah, definitely. As soon as I saw a reaction when I opened my mouth.
Oh,
yeah.
No!
it wasn't that bad. I think, listen, there's a lot of science that's shown a link with how good your dental health is to the rest of your health. So I'll be booking in 3 monthly.
Good man. So what is coming into clinic? Is it people with illnesses or is it people coming in saying, these are my intentions for 2020? These are my goals. How can you help me get there? Because I know weight loss is a big part of what you do at DNA.
Yeah, so it's your typical kind of start of the year. So as you said, weight loss, people have just gorged, binged and kind of taken this opportunity. Now they're back to kind of reset. So a lot of people just generally coming in look to do a kind of health screen, but also, as you say, weight loss is a big part of that.
Now, weight loss is obviously at the front of many people's mind come January, losing kilos or building muscle or, you know, fitting into a certain pair of jeans. What are some of the common obstacles that people face when it comes to failing to get to a healthy weight? And I think healthy weight is the key here. We're not talking about an ideal number for everybody. It's everybody's different.
Yeah, and I think just to start off, yeah, it's not just about weight, it's body composition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of scales only tell you one part of the picture. But I think the biggest misconception with weight loss is everyone believes in this paradigm that it's all about calories. So calories in, calories out. And you know, everyone just thinks it's self-evident and never questions the veracity of it. But actually, you know, what actually controls your weight is your hormones and your metabolism. And we all know people, just to kind of exemplify that, we all know people who weigh less than us and eat more than us.
They're not called friends. Oh, apart from Danny Norton. Danny Norton, I've never seen portions like it in my life. He doesn't stop eating.
Yeah, but my problem is I can't put weight on. Well, I struggle to do so, at least anyway. So it kind of works both ways.
Completely. And you know, you can actually end up in a scenario where you undereat. So a lot of people, when they try and lose weight, they go on a continuous caloric restriction. And they often with that exercise and sometimes over-exercise. Well, what's happening there is you've just got a continuous deficit and the brain will realize. So over a period of time, yes, you may lose weight initially, although it becomes harder if you've been doing that kind of yo-yo dieting over the years. And then the overtraining kind of just puts more stress on the body and raises your stress hormones.
So what can people do then in that case if it is a hormonal thing, if it is basically a kind of, I suppose, a natural thing that you've just been born with the inclination to kind of find it harder to lose weight? I mean, people listening might be thinking, oh, well, there goes all my hope for the new year. What can we do?
Yeah, so you, it's about trying to reduce that set point. So your body has a set point and it'll do everything that it can to bring you back to that weight. And, you know, if you have hormonal and metabolic issues, then it's going to just keep going up. So it's not just about kind of what you eat. And I think we're going to talk through different diets, because I think a lot of people kind of start diets and don't really understand the science behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's why some diets work, have the same results, and others don't for some other people. But also at the same time, I know we've spoken about this before, but it's also about kind of meal timings, frequency, and then other neglected aspects. I mean, obviously, people talk about exercise. That's obviously another trend. We're seeing different regimes pop up kind of all the time. It's as much about stress and sleep deprivation.
Can we go massively back to basics, please, Doctor, and explain what exactly metabolism is, impact it has on our body, and ultimately how we can tweak it?
Yeah, so I mean, typically when people talk about metabolism, they're referring to your kind of what's called a basal metabolic rate. So it's the kind of set rate that your body will burn energy. So it's the least amount of calories you need essentially to stay alive. And that's not kind of taking into consideration the extra energy that you may use by exercising.
Okay, so we've all got this kind of basal metabolic rate. What can interfere with that?
Well, so the factors that we kind of mentioned. So typically, if we're talking about weight loss, the trap that people fall into is that they undereat. And so that's kind of slowing down the basal metabolic rate.
So your body will then want to hang on to everything it can to try and keep you alive.
So it's in survival mode.
Okay. You talk then about the kind of the in versus out dilemma, really, because logic tells us if you burn more calories than you're consuming, then your weight should come down. When it comes to hormones, I know this is a big part of what you do when it comes to the weight loss clinic. It's a tricky one, because I don't want to say we're going to tamper with our body and mess around with our hormones, but there are things you can do to make sure that your hormones are working in your favour. And you are very much of this whole body, more holistic approach, necessarily over prescribed medication. If someone was to come to you and say, I'm all over the shop, hormones are up and down, I've been struggling to lose weight for, you know, as long as I can remember, what's a starting point if you have a consultation?
Yeah, so I personally think that it's very difficult to help someone lose weight if you don't have any analytics on them. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't work, because quite clearly it has through history, but it's just a far more analytical approach. And so with everyone, we would always do a level of testing, and that's a combination of looking at the metabolics that we were talking about and hormone levels. And that hormones can be everything from sex hormones through to, we talked about cortisol, stress mm-hmm. hormones, and also hormones around hunger signaling as well. And the reason why we go into that level of detail is because what may be causing someone's weight gain may be very different to the next person. So actually, I would say that it's only a fraction of people who actually genuinely overconsume calories. And for most people that I see, it's the other factors, the stress, the sleep, and undereating.
One thing we're seeing again and again in the news is about obesity being a disease. Is that something that you agree with your doctor's hat on?
Yeah, I think, you know, obesity happens at the same time as a lot of the other chronic diseases. So type 2 diabetes goes in hand. So does cardiovascular disease, which we've spoken about before. And when we talk about obesity, we have to focus mainly on kind of central obesity, because that's the type of obesity which is linked to problems with.
When you say central, you mean centrally located on the body?
Yes, correct.
around the term. You say on the website, weight loss is complicated. This is a massive understatement. Something else that's on the website is about weight loss injections, which I have to say surprised me, because I've never heard of this before. And immediately I was like, interesting. Could you bring some onto the show? What are they? How do they work? And who are they for?
Yeah, I think, you know, if something sounds too good to be true, it generally is.
That's why I'm curious to find more information, because it does sound too good to be true.
And so, yeah, no, we do use the weight loss injections, and they are very good with selected patients. And it's those patients I was talking about where there genuinely is an over consumption of food. So it works well with the right people. But again, people shouldn't just assume that if they start on this weight loss injection, it's suddenly going to be the be all and end all.
We're seeing huge rises in bariatric surgery, both in the region and internationally, and for a range of patients. You know, we were talking on Sunday about childhood obesity and even in under 18s. What are your insights on that? Who do you think it can be suitable for?
You know, it's a very aggressive approach, and I'm sure it suits the right person. I think we're living in a society now where people want quicker fixes, and you know, ultimately there are people whereby the lifestyle interventions haven't worked. But then you've also got to question, have those lifestyle interventions been correct because of all these misconceptions around weight loss? And unfortunately, it's perpetuated even by the professionals. So for me, it's a last resort. But don't get me wrong, it's been game changing for a lot of people, but it's irreversible. And there are consequences and complications as a result of it.
The Clinic. On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Specifically looking at diet, weight loss and metabolism, hormones and more, as we're joined in the studio by Dr. Nasser Al-Jafari. He is Medical Director at DNA Health Clinic. Doctor, we had Dr. Heather Ede in recently. She is from Novamed and she, similar in your sense, she has a very traditional GP background but now works with complementary therapies, a whole body holistic approach. And I said to her, based on all of her research, and she does, you know, almost little experiments on herself when it comes to supplementation and diet, plus obviously what she reads, what she researches in journals, what does she absolutely not have or do in her life? And she said, well, alcohol is just bad news in general, and processed meats, she's said it's baffling to her how processed meats are allowed to be sold. And I would put the same question to you, based on podcasts you listen to, obviously your training, colleagues, research you do, what is an absolute no-no in your life?
Yeah, so I think if we're focusing firstly on nutrition, I mean, you're constantly going around in circles. And I think part of that is to do with, and we've said it before, that we're all genetically set up for slightly different diets. I mean, that being said, there are some general principles which apply to everyone. And, you know, I think with the processed meats thing, you can probably just extend it to, and I have a general sort of phrase that I say to people, if the food didn't exist 100 years ago, you probably shouldn't be eating it. That's not to say that I strictly 100% of the time stick to a whole food, you know, diet, but everything in moderation that falls outside of that.
Sensible. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm now thinking about the red licorice that I had as a snack at 10 o'clock this morning. Right, let's get to the text line. Lots coming in. Leonie saying, if sleep and hormones are so important for weight loss, is trying to lose weight after having a baby fairly futile?
I like the way you put fairly in there, futile. It's certainly not futile, but it's definitely going to make it more difficult. So yeah, if you're up in the night feeding every couple of hours, then it's going to be tough. But also, at the same time, you don't want to go down the path of caloric restriction or undernutrition because of obvious reasons.
Especially if you're yeah, breastfeeding. And similar question from Zoe saying, any insights into metabolism after giving birth, finding it very hard to lose weight after my second child, no longer breastfeeding, trying to stick to under 1400 calories per day, plus jogging three times a week?
Yeah, so a lot of the kind of postnatal difficulties come from changes in hormones. And, you know, I noticed you mentioned kind of 1400 calories. Well, you know, we don't necessarily know what your basal metabolic rate or your metabolic need is, but if that 1400 calories is underneath what your requirement is, and it's what we were saying earlier on, I mean, it may well actually be detrimental.
What about the impact that what you're eating as part of those 1400 calories has? As in, is it better in that case to try and have foods, whatever they may be, which are a bit more kind of, you know, full of vitamins and minerals and certain nutrients that the body requires, maybe more so than most?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously you should focus on as nutrient dense food as possible. And natural food has inbuilt mechanisms to prevent us from overeating. I mean, people didn't know what calories were more than a couple of generations ago. And yeah, a lot of the issue with the refined foods is it has detrimental effects on your hormones, which are more fat storing. There's a lot of work that's come out regarding how it also has changes to your microbiome and how your gut bacteria can also be of a map where it influences a more obesogenic type phenotype.
A question here saying, no name on this one, and as I said earlier, you can be anonymous. Where can you go for a hormone test? You're talking earlier about how it's useful to get that data, get those analytics.
Yeah, I think the important thing to consider with hormones is that if you go to a sort of traditionalist, they'll for example measure your serum, your blood hormone levels, but your bloods have what's called a circadian rhythm, so they're changing throughout the day. So mm-hmm. if you want a more analytical approach, you should really go down the route of kind of salivary samples, and we even sometimes take it to the extent of urinary samples. So we're getting a complete picture of actually, your hormone production over a 24-hour period.
So could you go to your GP and say, I've got these concerns, I'd like a hormone profile doing, or do you need to seek out a specialist and probably pay for the privilege?
Yeah, you'd have to go to someone specific like myself, more of a kind of functional or integrative practitioner, because you may get a blank look if you walk through the door of someone else.
Like, here's my saliva, please test it.
The Clinic. On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Tuesdays, we talk health, bringing together some of our favourite experts to offer you some advice. We are, of course, talking diets because it's the first week of January. And who better to join us in the studio than Dr. Nasser Al-Jafari? He's medical director at DNA Health Clinic, based in Dubai, educated in Britain. He decided to focus on functional medicine after becoming increasingly disillusioned by mainstream medicine and that perpetual cycle of sicker patients and even more medications. Ironic, given that I'm basically rattling, given the number of medications I'm on right now, doctor. So I went to the pharmacy and said, just give me everything. I'm just full. But apparently I'm doing everything right, apart from not resting.
Yeah, I mean, it's only short term, so I'll let you off.
Okay, thank you. I also just said to you off air about what should I be eating and drinking, and you said not much. But whereas my grandma's philosophy was feed a cold and starve a fever. What's your philosophy? Well, she was old and Welsh, okay? It made sense at the time, Danny.
I'm sure she means well. I think, you know, just think about it kind of instinctively. What is it that you want to do when you're sick? You want to sleep and you don't want to eat. And I think there are inbuilt mechanisms to help you heal. If you look across the centuries, you look at great philosophers, the father of modern day medicine, Hippocrates said to eat when you're sick is to feed your sickness. So fasting and rest.
Okay, noted. So I shouldn't have had that turkey wrap.
That's a really interesting thought, that as well, because I mean, like our little boy Jack was quite ill over the kind of festive period at times and just kind of like flu-y, and he obviously wasn't eating much. And it's hard though as a parent, isn't it, to see them and kind of see him look, you know, kind of like he's losing weight in a sense.
Well, they do, and it doesn't take much to notice a difference in kids, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are overrun with questions, so we're going to go to the text line. No name on this one, saying, my weight loss has led to a lot of water retention, which is even harder to lose. What can I do?
Yeah, so that is difficult to know without sort of more information and knowing kind of if she's got any other sort of medical history or if she's on any medications, but that may well be a hormonal issue, and it's not uncommon that we see that. So, and can be overcome.
Okay. We mentioned earlier about bariatric surgeries and how they're definitely on the rise and they can certainly be a solution in some cases. Jamie's asking, what are the complications?
I mean, with any kind of major surgical procedure, there's kind of the obvious kind of short-term immediate complications. But I think specific to bariatric surgery, I mean, you can get malabsorption issues. Predominantly, you can get kind of syndromes where it's called dumping syndrome, where you can get sudden sort of drops in blood pressure and nausea and vomiting, particularly if you go down the more kind of major surgeries like gastric bypass. And then, you know, there's the kind of low grade, you know, a lot of people just don't enjoy a meal again. I'm not necessarily a complication, but it's
a quality of life thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had a number of really interesting and well-informed surgeons on that topic. So do check back in our podcast to have a listen to those. No name on this one saying, personally, I have tried meal plans, PTs, classes, diets, etc. in a continual effort to shift my Dubai stone. I'm sure you covered it, but I'd love to get some insight into what I'm doing wrong. Are there any clinics or doctors to suggest ways of doing things smarter? I like the word smarter there. What would you say, doctor?
Yeah, so we did cover it earlier, but just to put it in another way, it's because he's probably gone down the same route as most other people and had taken that kind of calorie approach with the change in his diet and exercise. He needs to be more analytical and look at the factors that we were talking about. So he needs to come to DNA for some analysis.
Get your data sorted.
Yeah.
Now, I think, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think, based on nothing apart from anecdotal evidence, that men find it easier to gain weight and lose weight. I don't know if it's an anatomical thing, but I feel like women have a bit more of an emotional relationship with food. And when you talk then about that being a side effect of bariatric surgery, about not enjoying food, my dad was very workmanlike before he had chemo. He had to lose 10 kilos because he was going to put it on with steroids. And the doctor just gave him a book and said, this is the low GI cookering book. And this is what you're going to do for the next 4 months. So you lose weight. So if you gain weight, it's not a problem. And he just did it. Mm. He just followed it very prescriptively. What differences do we see in men and women when it comes to weight loss and weight loss approaches?
Yeah, I think you're right. Anecdotally, I definitely think that women find it more difficult, but that also could be part and parcel of the fact that women seek advice a bit more and men kind of just stay in the background. I think there's a number of variables. Hormones come into play, but also I think there's the kind of psychological component as well. So the relationship with food, I think, is very different for a lot of females versus males.
PMS eating is real. I just want to put that out there. Okay,
I'll take your word for it.
You're a lucky man to escape that one. Doctor, do you have any weight loss recommendations for me? Anonymous question saying, I've been in menopause for the last 5 years, struggle with sugar and carb cravings and sluggish metabolism, which has caused me to put on excessive amount of weight. Thank you. What complications can come with the menopause when it comes to weight?
Yeah, so I know it's stating the obvious, but because of sort of drops in sex hormones, it can make it more difficult to lose weight. There's a couple of options. I mean, sometimes you need to be a bit more kind of rigorous with some of the interventions that we were talking about, the intermittent fasting. Also kind of stress hormones come into play. And then there are options with hormone replacement therapy, which we won't go down a rabbit hole with that, but it may be a topic for another day. Mm-hmm. But there's ways of kind of manipulating hormones to help.
I'm mentioning there sugar and carb cravings. What do you know what certain cravings can indicate in the body? You know, why do some people crave salty? Why would some people crave sweet?
So often, sugar cravings can just come from an addiction. So you just, it's a drug in a way. Sometimes it can be a sign of actually adrenal issues as well. So classically, it's referred to in the lay media as adrenal fatigue. It's not so much adrenal fatigue, but there's an adrenal dysfunction, which can lead to cravings of salt and sugar as well.
The Clinic.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In conversation now with Dr. Nasser Al-Jafari. He's the Medical Director at DNA Health Clinic, answering your questions around weight loss, diet, metabolism, hormones and more. So get in touch now, which is what Huda has done.
Yes, hi, doctor. I wanted to know that I just had a baby 6 months ago, and I wanted to start a diet, but I'm breastfeeding. So a lot of diets are like not recommended for me because of the nutrition that my baby will receive. So I wanted to know can I go about it, and how many times a week do I need to work out, and how many calories a day for me should be required as a breastfeeding mother to lose weight?
Yeah, no, thank you for your question. Very good question as well. So I think the important thing is not to focus specifically on calories per se, and focus on actually eating whole, real, nutrient-dense foods. There are other variables which may complicate things in the sense that you may not be sleeping very well, and also obviously you're breastfeeding. So this can affect kind of hormones as well, which may make it a little bit more of an individual or different situation to when you're non-pregnant. But I think a lot around just eating the right foods and also sort of timings of meals as well, not eating too late in the evening, but making sure that you're not sort of skipping meals and calorie depriving yourself, because then that can make the situation worse.
I think absolutely. If you are sleep deprived and a new mother, it's... your willpower is an absolute all-time low, I would say. So be kind to yourself above everything. I've got a question here saying, I'm on glucophage twice a day due to polycystic ovaries. I eat healthy, work out a few times a week, but I'm not able to lose weight. I take a few other vitamins, including chromium and Q10, to balance things out. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the same factors that we were talking about before. You have to look at every aspect of your lifestyle, so not just... nutrition, although there's a lot around nutrition that's practiced wrongly, and not under-exercising, moving, and not overtraining, because that can affect your stress hormones and making sure that you're sleeping appropriately. But PCOS is related to insulin resistance, so a lot of the fasting interventions that we've spoken about before can be very beneficial to reversing that.
Speaking of fasting, a question here, no name on this one, saying, I'm trying to lose weight, cutting out sugar totally and back on fizzy drinks. Having dinner at 7 o'clock, but when I get to bed at 10:30, I'm hungry and cannot sleep. What advice would you give there? Because I think when you've got that hunger, that rumble, sometimes it can make you feel quite nauseous, and going to sleep must feel like an impossibility. Is this something your body gets used to?
I think we need more detail. So, I mean, what are they eating the rest of the day? So quite commonly, people may skip breakfast because it's the easiest thing to do, and then not eat. They're busy, they're in a rush, they don't have much of a lunch, and then they gorge in the evening. the body's designed to eat and digest more during the daytime. You're less insulin sensitive in the evening. There may be stress factors as well. If the patient's anxious at nighttime, that can cause cravings. If you're eating the wrong sort of foods in the evening.
What would you suggest would be a good evening meal?
Early as possible. Mm-hmm. So leaving at least 4 hours between your last meal and going to bed. Preferably making it smaller than say your lunch or your breakfast, but you have to do what works well.
What I'm really asking is what do you have for dinner?
In the constituents.
Yeah, come on, doctor.
I honestly don't have a set pattern. And I think the beauty of kind of the way I practice is I can feast because I have periods of fasting where I balance it.
If you could give people one piece of advice moving into 2020 to give them the best chance of reaching or maintaining a healthy weight and body composition, what would it be?
I think taking more of an analytical approach, and that ties into prioritizing your health and paying more attention to maybe just starting off and having a proper MOT, medical, and not focusing around a lot of the sort of testing that happens in hospitals whereby they're trying to diagnose disease in its end stage, actually doing more insightful preventative tests.
Some informed decisions.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Nasser. You can find him at DNA Health Clinic.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.